Everybody thinks they know the Beatles, but how much do they really know? Every week, me, Jason Carty,
and me, Stephen Cockcroft, the Beatle Brains of Ireland, go here, there and everywhere, taking a forensic deep dive into the story of the greatest band of all time, the Beatles.
Come with us every week on a magical mystery tour as we talk albums, singles, solo careers, books, films, and so much more.
Become a member of Nothing Is Real on Acast Plus today for ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more, because happiness is a warm podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Nothing Is Real, a Beatles podcast, is powered by Acast. Welcome to Nothing Is Real, a podcast about the Beatles. My name's Jason Carty.
My name's Stephen Cockcroft.
And we're live on tape from Dublin and Belfast. And this is a surprise bonus episode because it is the 18th of December, 2020, and it is the release date for McCartney 3, the lockdown / rockdown new album from Paul McCartney. So myself and Stephen thought that we would have a little knocking of the heads on the album and drop it as a surprise for you all on today. Now, perhaps before I let Stephen talk, I should say that we have not discussed the album to each other already. Isn't that right, Stephen?
Absolutely. Not a word.
Not a word. We do not know each other's immediate opinion of the album.
That's not to say we haven't made a guess.
I have a guess. Oh, well, should we do that? Should I?
No.
I shouldn't guess what I think you thought. Okay, that'd get very meta. But in case you're worried about us and think that we're recording this at 3 a.m. on the 18th of December, we sneakily...
We are.
Actually, yes, we are. That's exactly what's happening. It's not like we managed to get our hands on a slightly earlier release version to listen to and review. So, let's get this first bit out of the way. What I think we'll do is if we go 3, 2, 1, and then call out our mark out of 10... for this album. You happy to play along with this?
Yeah, I'm fine. Okay. I marked it out of 55. But
oh, did you? Well, like that's too many marks.
That's fine.
Okay, so here we go. 3, 2, 1, 8.
4.2.
Really?
Out of 10, 5, yeah. No, out of... Right, do you want to do that again? I thought you were doing it out of 10.
I was saying 8 out of 10.
I'm saying 8.4.
8.4 out of 10. Oh, well, that's interesting. That's good.
8.5 out of 10.
Well, there we go.
Sorry, I was looking at a piece of paper where I'd written 4 out of 5. So
This is going well. 8.5
out of 10.
This is how bonus episodes go.
We're so
tired. Yeah, it is 3 in the morning. Wink. So yeah, McCartney 3. Okay, well, that's good. So we're both coming at it from a good place. I mean, the history of McCartney 3, if you're listening to this, you're obviously well plugged into what's been going on. You know, the first rumblings I heard about this album, I was checking my Twitter feed, and was on the 17th of September. I put up a tweet saying, hey, there's rumors of a new McCartney album coming out. And that was kind of from that usual place where you get all your rumors, which is the Hoffman Forum. And I think up until that point, it had been wishful thinking, really.
To be fair, I think you predicted this much earlier in lockdown. Very early in lockdown, you said, wouldn't it be great if Macca was locked in a studio somewhere? You were a bit worried that he was in New York at the beginning of the lockdown, and then we find out he was in England and he was in Sussex. And
yeah, we were playing Where is Macca and Is He Okay? Yeah. I mean, you know, when 2020 began 14 years ago, when the lockdown kicked in, the first pictures of Macca were that he was getting off some kind of private plane in New York.
Yeah.
And then the next thing we heard about was, and I can't remember what date it was, but it was that date in April when the telethon was on and he appeared and he sang Lady Madonna.
I think that's the point at which you definitely said to me, he's in the studio, we're going to get McCartney 3. Wouldn't it be great if there was McCartney 3?
That is what I noticed, because when he appeared on that thing for Lady Madonna, it was obvious that he was back in his home studio.
If not in the zone.
I think Elton John managed to deflect a lot of the bad publicity that night.
Yes. We'll cancel Elton for next season's interviewee.
But Elton had his I'm Dill Danding, which got a lot of opprobrium at the time, even though it was very uplifting. Paul was obviously back at his home studio in his windmill. And yeah, at that point I was like, please, can he just, if he has to lock down, this man is going to
somebody do something. Give him a guitar and a mellotron and...
So he was, we have to assume that it's roughly from that time that he was starting to put this together. And
I think kind of 90% of it must be recorded then.
Yeah, but here's the thing, that the first wave of publicity, he's been saying, it was only when I got to the end, I was keeping myself busy, and it was only when I got to the end, I realized that I'd recorded an album. Do you think he realized at the end he was recording an album? I think he realized earlier than that.
Unless he's actually having some kind of seizure and thinks he's living in 1970, I don't think that can possibly be right.
No, I think, I think he must have realized that the stars were aligning and that there was a possibility for him to
record his last ever album.
Well, that's another odd thing. You know, could it possibly be that way? I don't know about that. No?
I think I think if I were him, and obviously I'm not.
That is true.
I would be signing off with this, I think.
Well, the vague rumors started in September, and one of the things that triggered the rumors was the registration of McCartney 3 as a web domain, and some sleuths were saying, well, that was registered by the same company that registered other domains for MPL, but even that wasn't totally clear. And the first official word we got was on the 16th of October, and that's when the dice appeared on streaming platforms.
The famous dice.
The famous dice. And
last throw of the dice.
You think that's the symbolism involved?
I think that's the symbolism.
And so this was, you know, the again, it's interesting how these things flash spread through social media channels, that as soon as these dice had appeared on Spotify, so if you don't know, if you pulled up a track from McCartney or McCartney 2 and you looked at the album cover on Spotify, a dice rolling a 3 would come into view and a hand would take it away again. And I think it was very effective. I think it got the job done amongst the fans. That
it did.
But even then, it seemed hard to believe that it was really going to happen. And it was a few days after that the official announcement. Then people got dice in the post. That was kind of threatening.
Yeah, that was a worry. We didn't get dice in the post.
We didn't get dice. So that's a bit upsetting.
Shame on you, Universal Music, shame.
But you can now buy the dice as a bundle if you want. So there's no exclusivity there.
All you people that got free dice, take that. It's just another commodity.
The first official physical announcement was actually an hour before the real announcement, which was this Third Man vinyl, yellow and black vinyl. That was the first pack shot that we saw. I think that's what they called it.
That's right. And I see behind you there, you managed to get three copies of that.
Here's how dumb I am, because I got word of that almost immediately. And I got the website to buy one of these limited 300, there's only 333 copies, I think, of Jack White from the White Stripes runs Third Man Records, which is a bespoke boutique vinyl company. Wake up, Stephen. Stay away from the...
Jack White. It was just Jack White.
Jack White, a man literally made of wood and leather. And he has this bespoke label for vinyl recordings and all the rest. And he had 333 copies of McCartney 3 in yellow and black vinyl made from recycled old copies of McCartney 1 and 2, which seems a bit harsh, if you ask me, and wouldn't be of high vinyl quality. But anyway, I got to this webpage where I could have bought one. And instead, I did what any self-respecting person would do, which was I copied and pasted the link into the Nothing Is Real Twitter feed to say, hey, everyone, look at this. And by the time I went back, about 2 minutes later, they were all sold out. And they're now selling for about...
Schoolboy error.
Absolutely.
You're thinking of the fans.
I was thinking of the Nothing Is Real family. You were pointing out to them that
they couldn't buy one of them either.
Well, it was just the first time we saw the cover, and it was good and exciting, and then it was gone. They're about $2,000 now on the secondary market, even though nobody actually has one in their hands.
No one's bidding on my one.
And the you didn't get one, did you? No.
No, I didn't. No.
But the other topic of conversation in the intervening weeks has been the multitude of versions, and it is tiresome, isn't it?
It's tiresome, and it's slightly desperate. And given that we both agree this album is a solid 8 out of 10, or in my case 8.4 out of 10,
yeah,
it's really every day that it goes on and every new iteration that is released to an uncaring public, it just undermines, it just really takes the shine off what's coming, I think, for me, anyway.
You see, I think, you know, in a year or two's time, all of this nonsense will be forgotten. But what never surprised me was the fact that, you know, once the rumors came out and the dice was rolling in Spotify, I think people thought it was going to be a surprise record drop, which is de rigueur. Yeah. But I never suspected that. I totally suspected the McCartney publicity machine to go into overdrive. And it is a machine. We're now seeing 12 days of McCartney, where every day a song has been posted in the run-up to the actual release of the album, where the sheet music gets posted on social media and people are encouraged to do covers of it and all this kind of stuff, which is curious. But it's total parade type stuff does.
I mean, genuinely, I think he runs the real risk of, you know, the people who want to pre-order it will pre-order it.
Yeah.
Everybody else will be turned off by this. It's taking the magic or the mystery out of it. And, you know, everyone else will just stream it on Spotify. And I don't know how the algorithms work there, but, you know, is he going to get his number one? I mean, clearly this I made a joke about the last throw of the dice, but this is him desperately wanting a number one.
Well, Egypt Station got to number one in America, and got to number one in America on the back of, as I understand it, concert ticket sales with an album bundled in. And as soon as the album came out, it counted and it got to number one. But the subsequent publicity has nonstop been Egypt Station, the number one album in America. You know,
and except you know, he has form with Egypt Station. I mean, how many different colored, you know, that was amateur art compared with what's happening now. But I mean, you know, there were so many versions and Discovery editions and Explorer editions and Postman Pat editions. And
and in the end, I didn't buy. I streamed Egypt Station initially, and I bought it about 6 months later when I realized I just wanted a regular.
If he can't reel you in,
That's the thing. I mean, so Paul Sinclair, who runs the Super Deluxe Edition website, which I'm sure many people are familiar with, has calculated that if you wanted to buy all the McCartney 3 iterations, I think there's 8 vinyl colors with different covers. There's 4 different colored CD covers, each one with a different bonus demo track. There are bundles on the website of t-shirts and dice that it would cost you 650 English pounds to buy all the McCartney 3 iterations today, and the 18th of December, wink.
Yeah, and you know, you've got Japanese special edition as well.
There is,
there's a cassette version.
Yep.
You know, we're waiting for the wax cylinder,
the 8-track version. And the album originally was due out on the 11th of December, and because of apparently these vinyl issues, it's been pumped to today, the 18th of December. And you know, that means it's a Friday, and the next charts, particularly in the UK, is due out next Friday, which is Christmas Day. Will the Christmas Day charts have McCartney 3 at number one? I don't know. The Christmas charts are always very strange, and the album charts, as you've hinted, are always full of Christmas present albums, Robson and Jerome's, your Michael Ball and Alfie Bowe type records, you know, all these kind of things that you know, people who buy records once a year buy them in that week before Christmas. I would love the album to get to number one. I think that'd be great, but I'm just not convinced that it will, really.
But, you know, is it going to get to number one on its own merits, or is it just going to get to number one because Mr. Epstein bought 5,000
it's a version
copies
of that. Will it get to number 17?
It's kind of a version of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if it gets to number one, he'll obviously be
never
quite
happy.
He'll be quite happy. I'm not sure. Does it deserve to get to number one? I think it's a good album. And what we might do is just have a little stroll through some of the tracks and what we think about the whole thing. So track one, Long-Tailed Winter Bird. What do you think?
I hate this track.
Do you?
This track.
And
this
we're track, off.
And we're off. This track is just possibly. I was trying to think of a worse opening track on any McCartney album.
Yeah.
And I really can't think of one off the top of my head. I mean, somebody out there will have a worse track than this. Something, whatever the opening track on Wildlife is, must be pretty bad. This track is interesting for about 2 minutes.
Okay.
And then you realize, oh, it's going to go on to 2.5 minutes. And then you think, okay, it's going to come around again. And then it just comes around again for another 2.5 minutes. And it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't do anything. And it's a 5 minute opening, essentially instrumental track.
There's it one is essentially sort of instrumental.
Little lyric line. And it's just incredibly repetitive.
Do you dislike it because it's the opener? Like if it was a B-side or if it was somewhere else on the album, would you tolerate it a bit better?
I think I could tolerate it. I think I would like it if it was half the length. I think if it was a 2 minute opener, but it's a 5 minute opening track. It's the Crina Crore of its day.
Well, I've written here in my notes, it's audacious in a way that it's kind of like a mantra type instrumental. It's the tune we know from the trailer, so it had a certain familiarity because it's, you know, when the trailer dropped, that was the instrumental riff that they knew. And I kind of like the fact that okay, here we go. It's a McCartney record, i.e. McCartney 1, McCartney 2, McCartney 3. All bets are off, but we can have a 5 minute bonkers mantra instrumental opening track.
Yes, I was very encouraged, I say, by the first 2 minutes, but it's just far too long. And it just repeats itself.
It does repeat itself, yeah. You know, it doesn't have a second gear.
It's just like a loop, and it doesn't go anywhere. And some judicious editing. You say audacious, I say,
It is. It does set us up, though, for a certain sound of the record.
And, yes, it does do that. It does
and
do that.
I think it's interesting. This album is not lo-fi. I wouldn't say. Like McCartney 1 kind of has this lo-fi aesthetic. McCartney 2 has this lo-fi DIY aesthetic. Something about this is it's self-produced and self-played, but it's not lo-fi per se.
Do you think? I had a very different take on it. I thought there were a couple of kind of, I say I do like this album. There are a couple. Yeah. There are some very well developed, sort of very fleshed out tracks. But you know, there's quite a lot of stripped back. You know,
there
you
is
would
stripped
know
back,
it's
a, yeah. But stripped back is kind of different to lo-fi in a way. Maybe we'll touch upon this as we come back through certain other tracks. Track two, Find My Way. I'll go first on this one. I think this is exactly what you want from McCartney 3. It's crazy pop music. It's vibrant. It's well produced. It goes off in some crazy directions. He doesn't need a producer or anyone else. It's classic, as I've said before. He tips his head out onto the tape. You know, you're 90 seconds in and already more stuff has happened than on other people's entire albums.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I've written down, it sounds like Beck.
Yeah. Yeah, it does actually.
And it's that same, as you say, it's just we're going to throw the kitchen sink at this. And it's got a really nice little sort of instrumental touches. And I really like the outro to it.
Yes.
Is very nice.
His drumming can be a bit sort of, you know, bum, tit,
yes.
tit, very straightforward and fine. But that kind of crazy, I guess, playing on the hi-hats, open and closing the hi-hats, drumming
I loved,
is
I
nice.
I loved this track. I love this track.
That's good. Okay, Pretty Boys. What do you think of Pretty Boys?
The first time I heard this, I absolutely did not like this track at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I've listened to it, obviously, in the last 20 minutes. I've listened to it about 3 or 4 times. And it's one of my favorite tracks on the album. Now, it has a little hook that just worms its way into your brain, and it will just set up shop and live there in your brain for weeks. I love this track, and that whole you better look but you better not touch, that whole little hook
yeah.
that he repeats in the instrumental sections as well is just wonderful. The reason why I got to sort of 41 out of 55, I was grading each song out of five. So this is my first 5 out of 5.
Really? I was the same as yours. The first time I listened to the album, I was like, because you have these two opening tracks, which are a bit full on, and then this starts and it's not full on. And, you know, he kind of starts with, you know, look into my lens and all this kind of stuff. And
hey, baby.
Hey, yeah. And my initial thoughts were, I sort of imagined...
Dirty old Macca.
Well, I sort of imagined him playing it to a room full of music biz executives and them all sort of eyeing each other up going, wait, what's he on about? But actually, if you take a step back and you realize he's kind of painting a picture and, you know, take the lyric as a whole or even just listen to the piece of a whole, I think it is a very catchy, great, great song. I think, Bicycles in a Row, it's very imaginative and evocative.
He's talking in an interview. He said, you know, he's talking about male models.
Yes.
He saw the bikes and I suppose it was like the Boris bike in London or whatever. It's bikes that you can hire. And he saw these young guys queuing up for an audition or something. And this kind of reminded him. There is one lyric in it that I just do not understand. Working for the squire.
Does it rhyme with something?
It rhymes with bicycles for hire.
There you go.
And so. I wonder, is it too late to with it? Because I actually thought initially it was a very clever lyric because I thought he was singing working for Esquire.
Oh yeah,
the magazine. Is it too late to call him up and get him to change that lyric?
Let's just go around and alter all the lyric sheets for all the albums. Okay, so Pretty Boys is track 3. Track 4, Women and Wives. My initial feelings were that this is. A bit of a sort of genre exercise, you know. Yeah. I think he has said in interviews, "Oh, I was summoning Lead Belly," and you know, it sort of reminded me of that Lady Madonna performance where he's kind of on his own and he's kind of got an odd voice on.
I don't hear Lead Belly in this track. You know, straight from the Hog Hill Delta. I do love this. I love this song. I like that. It reminded me in a good way of something from Chaos and Creation. I'm one of those people. I'm not a big fan.
Yep.
Of Chaos and Creation. I think the songs are good, but I think I don't like Godrich's production. I think it's quite sterile. This has a really kind of nice, warm feeling to the production, and this was one of my 4 out of 5 songs. I really did like this song.
Again, it grew on me after subsequent listens in the 2 hours that it's been out, and the 12 days of McCartney promo had different people doing little kind of micro cover versions of these songs, and the lady whose name I didn't write down, who did Women and Wives, does a very nice version on the piano, and you kind of get a better feel for some of the piano changes because you expect it to go down and then it changes and goes up.
Yeah.
So it is actually I do like it as well. Track 5, Lavatory Lil.
It's the one we've been waiting for.
Well,
ever since we saw that on a track list, we thought this is going to be the winner.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, when the track listing came out, the first thing we saw were these kind of shots on websites of the album, and people were zooming in on the label to try and read what tracks were on the album or what the songs were called, or to zoom in on the sleeve and the lyric sheets. And there was a bit of a shrugging of the shoulders of people going, Lavatory Lil? Really?
And Liverpool Lou.
Yeah, and it's true. It's called Lavatory Lil. And Lavatory Lil?
I gave this song 5 out of 5.
Okay.
I really love this song. I absolutely love this song. I think the song is hilarious.
Yes.
I think the guitar playing is really good.
Yeah.
It's a song that you could sing along to, and we all know who it's about.
Do we? Do we?
Well, do we not? Do we not?
I don't. My gosh.
He said in
what
an interview.
What clues has he given?
He said in an interview, this is about somebody I worked with and I shall never tell who it's about. But that is a complete, that's a complete red herring.
Oh, okay.
This is clearly a song about Heather Mills.
I wondered, was that where you were going? And it was where you were going.
Do you not think?
I have to go and laugh and look at the...
You think that she's a winner when she's cooking you your dinner, but she's really coming in for the kill. And my favourite line is... so I can't remember the lyrics because obviously you've only been listening
We've only listened to it for an hour or two. It's 3 a.m,
yeah,
Stephen.
It's 3 a.m.
Oh, God, so tired.
The last verse, I suppose it's only a 3-line verse, is something along the lines of she thinks that she's a starlet, but she dresses like a harlot and she's heading... over the hill.
Yeah, that'll get the PC brigade out.
I do
like Lavatory Lil.
Love this song. I thought this is just one of those songs where he's, as you say, he's tipping the contents of his head.
Yeah.
He may not know it's about Heather Mills, but it's about Heather Mills.
And I think it's worth saying at this point that even though you're a bit cold on the opener, I do think this is a very well sequenced album. You know, it works as a proper album. I was looking back at McCartney 3 is 44 minutes long. McCartney 2 is 38 minutes long, 38, 36. And McCartney 1 was 34 minutes long. So it's the longest of the three McCartney albums. But it is put together in a, you know, you have the quietness of Pretty Boys, you know, the Woman and Wives thing. And then, you know, you have this Lavatory Lil to kind of break it up, a short, punchy bit of silliness. Absolutely great. Yeah, like Maggie May in the middle of Let It Be, you know, it has a palate cleansing effect.
It's great. You'll be singing along to this one, Toe Tappers.
And he can easily, I can see him. It's one of the tracks that I can imagine him doing with his live band, you know, just sort of.
I think he will
kicking
definitely,
in.
If there's a return to touring, I think this will definitely be on the live set.
It'll happen. We're getting there. Next track, Slidin'. I like this a lot. I really like this song.
This is the song that I've marked down. I've given this 2 out of 5, and it's my least favorite track.
I think the first time I listened to it, it didn't really register with me. And then on the second and third listen, I realized that it's got a lovely dense sound to it. The melody's a bit hidden. And
what's it about?
What's any of it about?
This is where I thought he was maybe being a little bit formulaic, where he suddenly thought, okay, I've got the kind of piano song, I've got the pop song, I've got the Lavatory Lil kind of rockin' fun song, I need a Helter Skelter type song. And this, I just thought this was a little bit formulaic or something. It's just heavy for heaviness's sake.
But I think it had it sort of reminded me a bit of, it has elements of that kind of Cut Me Some Slack song that he did years ago.
Yeah.
And it sort of has a fireman vibe to it. And I like his kind of notion, you know, sliding, flying through the air, you know, that kind of, one of the things that you notice when it's pointed out to you on McCartney 2 is that he's writing songs that reflect the sound that he's making. So until somebody pointed out to me, Temporary Secretary is about a secretary because apparently he thought that setting on the synthesizer sounded like typewriters.
Yeah.
That's why he wrote that song. And Sliding does have sliding music in it. So, he's kind of doing the same kind of trick again. I think it's the hidden, one of the hidden gem on the records. But that's Sliding. And that, as far as we know, I haven't got one of my 10 colored vinyl copies, but that's the end of side one.
Yeah.
Solid enough side.
Solid enough side. Good, very good side, I think.
No, it's a very good side. Side two opens with Deep, Deep Feeling. What do you think of Deep, Deep Feeling? Deep, Deep Feeling is 8.5 minutes plus.
Yeah, what I've written down here is Big Oddity.
Okay.
It's a big oddity.
he was in the Goodies, wasn't he?
He was in the Goodies. Yeah. I did like this song just on first hearing. It seemed it sort of twists and turns, and you think it's over, and then it's not over, and then there's a different section. And I like this a lot. I like the sound. I liked his voice on this track.
Yeah.
I thought this was a great track. And again, I would say this was a sort of audacious opening to side two if you're in old money and listening on vinyl.
Yeah, I love Deep, Deep Feeling. And I think it's the cornerstone of this project in a way, because it's, you know, crazy Macca, melodic Macca, you know, musical Macca. Yes. It's all these things in the one place.
He stops at every station. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And what I've kind of, the notes I've written are, you know, it's like a dream that it's got a very strange form. And it's one of those songs that you're actually fine with being long, you know? And almost like, you know, your Hey Jude's or your Isn't It a Pity's and all the rest, you know, the fact that it's going on, it's not boring. And it reminded me of Sparks. So,
okay.
Sparks, about 20 years ago, they put out an album called Little Beethoven, and they wrote these very repetitive mantra-like songs where they would literally take one or two lines and they would sing those lines over and over and over again. And it's a fantastic record.
Yeah.
You have, yeah. So it's, so part of it reminded me of that. But then there's this bit in Deep, Deep Feeling, it's at 5:45 in, where you realize he's actually been, there's been three different melody lines in the song, and then like silly love songs, he just hammers them all in one on top of each other. And you're like, oh my God, you're so, you know, you make this look so easy.
Yeah. this is, you know, he does this from time to time. And it seemed to me to be a little bit of a throwback to the Wings era. Just even with the keyboards in it, I thought was a bit sort of 70s. I don't know what he's playing there, but it did seem to have that kind of retro feel to it.
Yeah, apparently his Mellotron is on this album somewhere. I think it's in the opening track as well. And then it has this kind of guitar coda breakdown at the end. And that for me was the bit that really felt like Chaos and Creation. It's this close mic'd guitar. And you kind of, I don't know whether it's a new version or that's the original demo version or whatever it is, but it comes right up to the fore. And I think it's great.
It is. No, I absolutely agree with you. This was another one of my 5 out of 5 tracks.
Yeah, it's really something. And then that again is, you know, it seems in this album he likes putting kind of one song up against the other. The next track is The Kiss of Venus, and this is predominantly just guitar and voice until a harpsichord appears later on. I love this. I think this is
this is the one that that Donovan wrote, I think. it has that kind of picking guitar style with him singing along with the melody that he's playing on the guitar. The first time this came on, this is another one that I sort of winced a bit when it came on. I thought, oh, the voice.
It's very old voice, Macca.
It's very old, very, very old voice. And you can hear him breathing sort of in between the lines and this intake of breath. And I sort of thought, oh, this is almost like a demo quality that maybe a demo from a song that you would refine into something like Chaos and Creation. But again, like Pretty Boys, the more I listen to it, the more I like it. And again, I gave this one 5 out of 5 as well.
Yeah, it's got quite the melody line to it, you know.
And it's just such a good melody.
Yeah. And he's, you know, often, you know, the thing about Macca is he'll play counter melodies, but actually he's singing the melody over the guitar, playing the same melody. And it's very striking and it's very
beautifully
good.
Beautifully done, yeah.
Kiss of Venus. Yeah, I agree. 5 out of 5. I think it's a great song. Next track, Seize the Day. I don't think this is a good song, particularly. It's one of my lesser favorite tracks.
He's got that Lady Madonna electric piano.
But it also has this kind of, it reminded me a bit of Who Cares from Egypt Station, this song. And it's one of these songs where he's, you know, it's put it there, do it now, seize the day. Yeah, it's one of those kind of songs.
It's
all right to be nice. Isn't that what he sings in it?
That's what I wrote. I I sort of said, yeah, it's still all right to be nice. But I was listening again in the few hours that we had available.
You've listened to it a lot.
The more that I listen to this, this seems to me not to be like a who cares. It's not seize the day in a, you know, let's all get out and have a wonderful time and type thing. it's an old man. You know, he looking back and he's saying, you know, there'll come a time when the old days, the old ways are gone, and we'll be sorry that we didn't seize the day. And it suddenly became this very, it seemed to take on more meaning. It seemed to become very wistful. It was sort of not like, you know, captain, my captain, seize the day.
Yeah.
Young people, we've got to live life to the full. It was an older person passing on advice. And it just seemed to be something very poignant.
Well, then maybe through the lens of 2020 and the fact that we haven't been able to do the things we wanted to do, maybe that gives it a certain angle.
I agree with you that it's still all right to be nice. I just sort of thought, oh, that's very twee Macca, and that's fine. But actually, I, the more that I listen to it in the very short time we've had available, the more that I like this track. I marked it up from a 3 to a 4.
Okay, I will go and pay it some more attention.
Well, if you go and listen to that, I'll go and listen to Sliding.
Okay. Next track is the second last track on the album, Deep Down. And I forgot what order we're doing this in. So I'll let you head off on Deep Down.
Deep Down.
What do you think?
I like this. I thought his voice was not great on this. I thought his voice really was not great. I've written down, it's got a fantastic groove going to it. I think it's lyrically sort of not even half baked. It doesn't really go out. But I thought this is the song which is 50% McCartney 1 and 50% McCartney 2.
That's interesting. I mean,
you know, it's got a kind of an acoustic-y thing going on, but it's got that synthesized horn thing going on as well. And I just thought it was a nice amalgam of the two.
I think this is probably my least favorite song on the album, this track.
Okay.
I certainly put Seize the Day much, much ahead of it. I think it, you know, it has a couple of interesting bits. It has this kind of odd noise at the start. But
that reminded me of Glasses from a Barney one.
From Hottest Sunglasses.
Hottest Sunglasses.
It's just shy of 6 minutes long, and I don't think it pulls off what its namesake Deep, Deep Feeling pulls off.
No.
I think it feels like a long 6 minutes. And, you know, it's not quite as groovy as he thinks. It reminded me of that kind of, you remember Party Party, that song that came out in Flowers in the Dirt, where he's just, come on, we're having a good time, aren't we?
This is a song I actually thought might have been better as an instrumental.
That's possibly true.
I don't think the lyrics, such as it is, and I don't think his voice adds much to this, but I do like the little kind of parping horn thing going on in the background. You know, it seemed to me that's a McCartney 2.
Well, I think, you know, even though I was saying at the start, I didn't think it's particularly lo-fi, what the album does have is it does have interesting things happening in the corners from the few times I've listened to it already. And I'm kind of looking forward to going back and listening to it in different ways, headphones, speakers, car, all those kind of things.
In different colors.
And obviously when it's bright, because we've only listened to it since midnight when it came out. So, you know, it's not a dull record, you know? And then as soon as it's begun, the album is over. So the last track is Winterbird/When Winter Comes. And Winterbird is just a short blast of Long-Tailed Winterbird, kind of a reprise, that old trick that he has done on how many records?
And thankfully, it's only 30 seconds
or so.
Well,
you probably prefer that length of
Winterbird. I do.
But what, he's done that on Band on the Run. He's done a version of this on, this Venus and Mars has a reprise at the end of Side One.
It's that whole sort of early 70s where he's kind of in smoke-filled barns, stitching songs together, you know.
But then the track that goes with it, to close the album proper, is When Winter Comes. And I think this is a solid piece of magic. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's a long time since we've had a Farmer Macca song. I loved it.
I gave it 2 out of 5.
I can see a raised eyebrow. 2 out of 5, no?
This is the song that he recorded some time ago with George Martin.
Yeah.
What I would say
is... Which is why the voice might sound a little bit different on it.
There is, but there is a shockingly bad edit.
Oh, is there? I didn't notice.
Between the little instrumental of Winter Bird.
Yeah.
And then there's a sort of a little short note held, and you think he's going to sort of just fade this in, but you can almost hear the tape machine being switched on. There's a really noticeable edit, and I thought you set up a fade and a segue, and then you just don't pull it off at all.
Well, maybe that's intentional. Would it be?
Maybe. I just thought this was a bit kind of ho hum. Oh, it's another Life on the Farm track.
Whereas I was like, yeah, another Life on the Farm.
Another
track.
Life on the Farm. I thought it was slightly self-conscious. We've got to go down to the, you know, there's some foxes and there's some chickens and I've got to go and mend a fence and, you know, do all that. The other thing is I have been racking my brains for the last
two or three hours, yeah.
Trying to decide what it reminds me of. The chorus is something else and I can't just, it's kind of circling in the back of my mind what this song
A McCartney
is.
Song or another song?
No, I think it's another song and there's just the little hook in the chorus reminds me of something. As soon as we stop recording, I will remember.
That's how the mind works. Yeah. Now I like the song a lot and...
It was okay. It's okay. Two out of five is maybe a bit harsh. 2.5. It's a kind of nice ending. It's a downbeat ending. But it for all that it was recorded, you know, while George Martin was still with us, where it's placed, do you not think it has a kind of a...
Farewell.
Feeling of an ending, yeah?
Well, I think he's
retiring to the farm sort of thing.
I think putting it at the end is very, it almost sounds a bit like a hidden track, you know? Mm. I think the meaning of the song does change by having it at the end because he's been jumping through all these hoops for the previous 40 minutes. And then at the end, he's kind of saying, winter is coming, you know, next week is Christmas. Will I be number one? And I better go sort out some foxes in the field and all the rest. I think it's very charming and it's very reminiscent of, you know, your Hey Diddles and your Heart of the Country type stuff. And that made me very happy.
There is that kind of genre of Macca song. And I suppose maybe I'm being a little bit, you're talking me round. Maybe I'm being a little bit.
Well, you've only had an hour or two to listen, Stephen, so it's hard to make a very...
The more that I listen to it, I'll probably come around. But I did think the placement of the song was significant. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I think you know...
No, it does have a sort of I've got to go feel, you know?
It is, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly it.
So overall, I think it's a triumph. We weren't expecting an album in January and we're in December with an album and... It's worthy of what it is.
It is. I'll be honest. I was very worried about what we were going to get because certain people. I'm not pointing at anybody in particular, but you know, you had this expectation. You know, McCartney 1, McCartney 2, McCartney 3. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be. And I thought we're all just setting ourselves up for a fall here. Yeah. That he hasn't. I think. Produced an album this good for ever such a long time. It's far better than Egypt Station. I'm going to be listening to this album long after I have put my many versions of Egypt Station on the shelf.
I think I will be listening to it. I mean, I'm a big fan, generally speaking, of circa 40-minute albums, you know? There's something to be said for, you know...
Exactly the right length.
Yeah, it's exactly the right length. It doesn't outstay its welcome. And there may be bonus tracks hanging around. And there might be a version out next year with 5 bonus tracks. I don't want it. This 44 minutes, 11 tracks is just what you want. And I know what you mean about, you know, I was kind of worried about listening to it for the first time. I almost didn't want to listen to it. I just wanted to keep my idea of it clear. But the thing I found interesting about this whole McCartney 3 package and the publicity running up to it is, you know, often when Paul's putting out a solo album, he's kind of in competition with, he's still in competition with the Beatles. The context is, this is Paul from the Beatles. And what I loved about everybody getting excited about McCartney 3 was actually, we don't give a hoot about the Beatles. We care about McCartney 1 and McCartney 2, and we're seeing it as part of that story. And so you're coming to the album in a totally different way. You're not expecting to hear, you know, Paperback Writer or Hey Jude. You're expecting to hear, oh, actually, I know what I'm going to get. I'm going to get some good pop songs. Some of it's going to be crazy. Some of it you're going to be like, what's he thinking? What's he doing? I'm going to go on the journey and that'll be great. And if I don't like it when I first hear it, that's cool, because nobody liked McCartney 1 and 2, more or less, when they first heard it.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong and he's right and it'll grow. I'll like it in 10 years' time. So that was the context you kind of see it in or hear it in.
I think that's right. This is an album, as you say, it's full of little twists and turns. There's lots of interesting stuff going on. It's much more interesting, much less contrived than Egypt Station or New, where he's clearly chasing something. He's chasing relevance. He's chasing a single. He's chasing a hit.
Yeah.
For all of the marketing that's going into this, the music itself doesn't sound like he's chasing a hit.
No, it's not. And it does make you think about, you know, all the albums he has made in the years with named producers, when he could have just been, you know, this is, we bang on a lot about the McGear album. This has got Spirit of McGear in it, you know? Yeah. And, you know, he could be throwing out one of these albums every 2 or 3 years if he was just hiding in his, in Hog Hill.
His bunker.
Yeah, that it's an absolute treat.
Perhaps if he retires to the farm and once he's dealt with all the foxes, he can turn one of these out every couple of years.
Oh, listen, you know, as soon as everything passes, he'll be back on a stage with Abe and Rusty and Brian and Wicks doing his thing. That's where he wants to be. Well, you know,
I want to hear Lavatory Lil in an arena setting. With a horn section in the audience.
I think we'll get it too. I think the album's a treat, and it's always interesting that McCartney has a very hardcore set of fans who think they know what he should do, you know, like, oh, he should play Ram live and he shouldn't do Beatles songs. And for years, fans have been saying, we want a McCartney 3. And for years, he hasn't been giving a McCartney 3. And the game was, well, is Fireman McCartney 3? Is Chaos and Creation McCartney 3? And now you have a McCartney 3. You know, I think it's worthy of the back catalogue. I'm very happy with it.
It's worthy of the name, and you can't say more than that. And if you haven't been queuing outside HMB since midnight, definitely worth your money. Just pick a colour and
away you go.
Put your money down.
Well, I do want to, when I wake up in the morning, go to a regular store and just buy a black coffee, and a black copy of the album. The other note I've written at the end of my notes here, overall, there's not enough crazy keyboards. That's another side note I've written. I wouldn't have minded a few more crazy keyboards.
A few more crazy keyboards.
But that's okay. You know, we'll give it a few more weeks and we'll see how it settles. You know, how we feel about it in 2021. Before we go, we want to talk about somebody who probably many of you might know already. In the run-up to this in the past few weeks, we had the very sad death of Ryan Brady, and we kind of wanted to dedicate this podcast about McCartney 3 to Ryan. Ryan was co-host of the Take It Away Paul McCartney podcast, and that's a podcast that myself and Stephen, you know, did and do love. It's a wonderful body of work, a labor of love, which kind of looks at the solo McCartney years. And when we were trying to figure out how we were going to approach our own thoughts on Nothing Is Real, Take It Away was a huge influence, wasn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, it really was. It's hard to kind of comprehend that Ryan isn't here and isn't able to share his views on this particular album. I mean, genuinely, one of the things that I was looking forward to was hearing what Take It Away would do with this record. You know, they'd gone all the way up to Egypt Station. Yep. The whole catalog was covered, and this was a new opportunity. And I mean, it genuinely is a disappointment that we're not going to get Ryan's take on this. He was hugely enthusiastic about everything that he did, and it's terribly sad.
It is terribly sad, and when I was the exact same when McCartney 3 was announced, I was like, yay, we'll get another Take It Away episode, and I was really looking forward to that. And Ryan was a young guy in his early 30s, very accomplished. He'd was a vice president at Atlantic Records, and he was involved in a lot of artists. He was a true music fan and a music lover, and we were both very, very sad, and we just wanted to dedicate this particular podcast to him, and our thoughts are with his family and friends. It's a very sad thing and a very sad year.
Yeah.
But there we are, folks. Look, McCartney 3, what do you think? Take some time, have a listen, and you know, get in touch with us, and we'll talk about it all online. You know, we're available in the usual places at BeatlesPod on Twitter. The Nothing Is Real Facebook group that Stephen runs is there. Just knock on the door. And thank you for all your kind reviews and downloading us wherever you get your podcasts. But for now, this has been a bonus episode of Nothing Is Real. Go off and enjoy McCartney 3. I think we'll go and get some rest, Stephen. It's very late. It's very tiring. My name is Jason Carty.
My name is Stephen Cockcroft.
And this has been Nothing Is Real. Thank you for listening.
Nothing Is Real is powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Is Real. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, why not become a member? You'll get access to ad-free content, bonus episodes, and so much more. Follow the link in the show notes, sign up on Acast Plus, or visit our website, nothingisrealpod.com.